Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, April 30th, 2018, and you're listening to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here with fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein, who was at Lambeau Field all weekend covering the NFL draft, doing me a huge solid so that I could be a groomsman in my cousin's wedding. And so Tom was there firsthand for Brian Gutekunst's first draft as general manager. And let's start with this, Tom. What did you sort of make of his first go-around in the big chair?
Well, I thought he manipulated the board very well. I think getting an additional first-round pick was a big coup for him. I think he used his picks about as effectively in terms of moving around the board as he could. But I also think he left some talent out there that could have helped him this year. And most specifically in the first round when he passed on Derwin James and Tremaine Edmonds, I think either one of those guys was more of a 2018 pick, someone who could come into the starting lineup right away. And I think moving back kind of took him out of that pool of players. So, you know, he sort of sacrificed a person he could plug and play in 2018 for two first-round picks. Jair Alexander, who he took number 18, and then whoever that number one pick turns out to be next year. So it's a bit of a gamble, but it's also a long-term investment. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I can't say it was a great move. I can't say it was a bad move. I can say that I think he manipulated the board, and getting a first-round pick mathematically, that was a really intelligent way to do it. I didn't think anybody thought he could get another first-round pick. So, in all, we'll find out. We're going to be watching those two guys, their careers, versus Jair Alexander and whoever he picks next year.
Yeah, you know, in your column in today's paper, you talked about how this was setting up more for 2019 than 2018. And as I was reading that, the one line that sort of jumped out to me was when you started talking about salary cap space in terms of what they might have in the future, because after this season, you don't have HaHa Clinton Dix on the books, you don't have Clay Matthews on the books, you don't have Randall Cobb on the books. And so as I started to read that line and then think about it within the context of your column as a whole, I started thinking, okay, so Gutekunst was sort of, you know, positioning himself really well for 2019, but going into 2019, the team could have several key contributors or some of their biggest contributors at certain positions that may or may not be here, you know, going into that 2019 season. And so that is the one little minor point that I couldn't really, that didn't really register with me, is if you're building for next year, but you have a number of key guys whose contracts expire after the current season, how do those two things align with each other?
Well, you know, first of all, when I say that they're building, you know, that this is positioned for 2019, I don't believe that was the mission. I believe that was the result.
Gotcha.
I think he's totally building for 2018. In his mind, Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson and one of those wide receivers is going to come in, and maybe even the guard, Cole Madison, winds up starting. You know, in his mind, he positioned himself for 18. He's building on what Ted Thompson started. But I'm saying in reality, this pushes, to me, the fact that he didn't take a guy who can definitely contribute right away this year, that it more or less the result is it positions it to 19. Now, your point, it doesn't mean all of those guys won't be back.
Correct, yes.
What it means is he's got a ton of flexibility to decide which of those guys he wants back. You know, there's no guarantee that Clinton Dix is going to be any good anymore. You know, based on last year, he may not want to re-sign him. You know, Clay Matthews is going to be 33 years old. He may not want to re-sign him. Randall Cobb, you know, he doesn't want him at $10 million.
No.
So I think he also drafted, you know, one thing that he and Ted Thompson have similar is they also think about the future and who they're drafting. So they drafted three wide receivers, and they know they got to replace Jordy Nelson, probably Randall Cobb, and, you know, maybe even come up with another guy. So they took three receivers. Cornerback, of course, we know why they took all those corners. And then I think he last year's draft sort of addressed some of the future as well, you know, with Vince Beagle and Montrevious Adams and things like that. So really it's kind of a building process. And then I think he's, with all the cap room he's going to have next year, he's going to have choices to make, whether he wants to go outside the organization to sign guys or re-sign some of his own. And anytime you have options, that's a good thing.
I think that, you know, what you mentioned is pretty important, that when you look at why they drafted the corners, that was pretty obvious. When you look at why they drafted the receivers, that was pretty obvious. And so then I think the next natural question is, well, why didn't they push a little bit harder to try and find somebody, you know, to rush the passer? And so, you know, Gutekunst basically admitted and said that this was a weak pass rush draft in his opinion.
Right.
And I think that that opinion is probably shared by a lot of people around the league. But I guess my question is, and this was something that I said on the radio earlier this morning, in a business where scouts will tell you that if you hit on 50% of your guys, you're doing a tremendous job. If that is true, and if scouts are wrong just as much as they're right, wouldn't it behoove the Packers to take two extra swings at an outside rusher somewhere later in the draft when they maybe took a punter and a long snapper? Because if you're wrong as much as you're right, then you might hit on one of those guys.
Maybe. It's just that it really was a down year for edge rushers. And at least from what I've read, and I don't know if not necessarily going to be a better year for that, I think what he did was take advantage of the strengths of the draft. And one of those was wide receivers.
Yep.
Another was corner. And then I think he, with the extra picks, I'm not a fan of taking a long snapper. I don't know why he did that. But the punter, if you really believe this is a guy who can flip field position, it's worth it. I think it is. I'm never a big fan of drafting punters because what they do in college often means nothing in the pros.
Right.
I've seen the Packers draft Ray Stackowitz and B.J. Sander, and they were both busts. And they used high picks on those guys. Third round, I think Stackowitz was a second, and Sander was a third. It usually doesn't translate. And this guy's going to have to prove he can kick in the cold. But, you know, you look at his track record at probably the best school, you know, the best football school and the best conference. And there's things where you go, okay, well, he's pretty preconditioned to kick in big games. And
right.
Kick, in pressure situations. And the only thing we don't know is kicking in the cold. It probably helps that his dad's from Wisconsin, but I don't think he's kicked in a lot of cold weather games.
No, certainly not. And so then I guess the natural question after that is, what didn't they like about Justin Vogel? You know, a guy that again set the franchise record for net punting after Tim Mastay did that a couple of years ago, and a guy that had only two touchbacks in his rookie season, and a guy that was from Florida and played at Miami, so he was not experienced with cold weather at all. I thought that, you know, for a guy that had all of those things, you know, coming into the season, I thought he played pretty well. I'm not saying there wasn't room for improvement, but I was very surprised to see they drafted a punter, and they must really think highly of Scott.
Yeah, I don't think this was a referendum on Vogel. It's possible it was, but I think it was one of those situations where you're sitting there and you've got this really high grade on this punter, and you know you've got a bunch of fifth round picks, and you're saying to yourself, you know, this guy could transform our special teams. He could be part of really, well, you would consider him part of defense. And I think that it was just something where they said it's too good to pass up, and let's let him compete for the job. And if Justin Vogel has a really good camp and, you know, it's close, they can trade one of them. So I think it was really more about Scott than it was about Vogel. Although I did keep thinking, you know, whenever we talk to Ron Zook about Vogel, he'd always talk about consistency, that he needed to improve his consistency. And I always wondered about that. You know, there was something there that they weren't totally thrilled about.
Another thing that you noted in your column is that Scott has the ability to kick off, you know, which is not something that Vogel did. As Mason Crosby gets older in his career, and you know, obviously kickers can go well into the 40s, so he's not that old. But is that something that you think could be appealing to them, a way to rest Crosby's leg a little bit without having to tax him as much in that area if Scott does pan out as a kickoff guy?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, maybe he winds up, you know, being a better kickoff guy and in the cold can actually get it to the end zone. You know, Crosby had a little trouble getting, you know, he still has a little trouble getting it into the end zone when the weather turns cold. His leg's not going to get stronger, Crosby. So if the guy's a dual threat, and it's pretty clear he's a pretty good athlete, too. I think that probably did have a little bit of a factor in it.
In terms of you know, the draft itself, they went in with 12 picks. They had plenty of ammunition to move around. But you know, what did you sort of take away from I guess how aggressive or not aggressive Gutekunst was willing to be in this weekend as a whole? What did you think of, I guess, just sort of generally how he handled having the most picks in the league?
Well, you know, so part of this whole evaluation as well is that he had to give up a third round pick to
Exactly.
Seattle to move up into the 18th. And there were some quality guys that he missed out on. You know, we'll find out whether they're better than the guy he wound up trading up for in the third round. But, you know, that's going to be part of the equation when judging this draft in the next couple of years as well, is we'll have to look and see there in the third round. But I think he did a good job of getting back into the third round. He had to give up that first pick in the fourth, but that's the value of having that pick. A lot of people want that pick, and he was able to use it to get into the third round, not that far beyond where he was slated to pick. I think it was, let's see, that third round pick was what, 76, 75, something like that. And then he picked, if I recall, 80 or 90,
It
something
was
like
70,
that.
76, excuse me. They traded 76.
76. Okay, and then what did they end up picking at?
88.
88. So he moved 12 spots down. You know, so I thought he did a good job of getting back into the third round. I thought it was really important that they do that. Otherwise, you know, I don't think it didn't look to me like there were a ton of late round trades for jacking up. Plus, he had 3/7 and he had 3/5. You know, I don't think there was a whole lot of reason to move around down there. I think once he did first round trade and the third round trade, then, you know, I think he positioned himself pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. And that third round pick, I think, could be key because, you know, around that number 76 that they traded away, that was a time when there were a couple edge rushers on the board. And so if you look at the way that those guys may pan out, whether it's Sam Hubbard or some of the others that went in that general vicinity, if we see how their careers pan out in a couple years, that would be sort of an interesting way to look back at it, because I think that was a round where it would have made sense for them to target an edge rusher if they still had that pick.
Exactly.
And in terms of the way that they addressed that position as a whole, you know, 1 7th round pick, a player that they brought in on a visit here. I'm sure it was a guy that, you know, not many fans, if any, had heard of until, you know, you wrote that story, about guys that they brought in for their visits. But Kendall Donerson from Southeast Missouri State. I mean, this kid looks like an unbelievable athlete. And, to be able to run as well as he does, what do you think? Is this truly a flyer, do you think? Or do you believe that they think this guy is a gem?
I think this is a total flyer. It's totally based on athletic ability. So it's one of those guys where you say, this guy is off the charts athlete. Let's see if we can turn him into a football player. He hasn't been a great football player. Basically, Gutekunst is saying, look, here's a great athlete, Mike Pettin. Turn him into a football player if you can. If you can't, you know, we give up. Based on athleticism alone.
Right. You know, if you're gonna spend a pick or make a flyer, a 7th round pick at number 248 is not a bad place to do it. But, you know, Donerson had 13.5 tackles for loss, 6 sacks last season, and led the team with 3 forced fumbles. But again, level of competition at Southeast Missouri State, overall football experience against top competition, you know, it's not, you know, exactly what many of the other players in the draft are facing if they come from a power school. So it's going to be a huge adjustment for him, but you never know when you're going to find somebody. The guy runs
better than most of their cornerbacks.
Yeah, you know? He's in the 4.4s, isn't he?
4.8.
Yeah, 4.48, which is faster than Jackson, who is 4.54, faster than Randall Cobb. It's impressive.
Bonte Adams, all those guys. Not the receivers they picked on this weekend, but anyway, a 4.48 guy at what, 228 pounds or whatever he is, that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, at 248 actually, so even better.
48?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really something. Let's start to go through the draft chronologically a little bit, and you go back to day one, and they have the 14th pick. And as you see the board unfolding, and as I saw it unfolding, now I wasn't at Lambeau, so I didn't have the ability to converse with all the other people in the auditorium. But when everyone sort of saw that Edmonds and James were going to be there at 14, I mean, I personally thought the Packers hit the lottery in that situation. And then, of course, they trade back. But what did you make of sort of how the board unfolded initially before they made the trade with the Saints?
Well, it was surprising. I mean, I knew that people kept saying there were going to be someone there who was taken that nobody was really predicting that the mock drafts weren't picking. And most often I heard that it would be McGlinchey, and that's really what it turned out to be. Everyone assumed Tampa Bay was going to take Derwin James. Buffalo ended up moving there. Everyone thought Cleveland was going to take Bradley Chubb, and they took Denzel Ward. I think I was surprised a little bit by San Francisco taking McGlinchey.
Yep.
And I think Tampa Bay taking Vita Vea. Now, they obviously lost Ndamukong Suh, but I really thought that they would try to go for Derwin James after that. I think their guy was Minkah Fitzpatrick. And then I think Miami wound up taking him. And so they just went with, I think I was, I'm mixing it up. I'm sorry, Vita Vea went with Tampa Bay.
Correct.
So I didn't see that coming. I thought he would go either to Miami or he'd be there for the Packers. Or maybe go to Washington.
Yeah.
He might have gone to Washington if he hadn't been taken there, too.
Exactly. You know, that was a guy that Washington was rumored to be interested in. You know, the thing that, that sort of crossed my mind immediately was, you know, the whether or not the Browns taking Denzel Ward at four threw any sort of a monkey wrench into what Gutekunst wanted to do, because certainly, you know, for a team that needed corners as badly as the Packers did, targeting the number one corner in the draft would have made a lot of sense. And if he had got, if Ward had slipped to anywhere around 7, 8, 9, 10, you wonder if Gutekunst would have gone up and made a play. So do you think that, that when Cleveland and John Dorsey took Ward at four, that there was an immediate need for adjustment in what the Packers wanted to accomplish on Thursday night?
Well, I think they had several scenarios, and one of them was that if Ward, I'm guessing, but I'm, you know, it's pretty logical that if Ward started to drop, that they would consider moving up. And given what it cost for Arizona to move up with Oakland, I think if he had dropped to 10, I think they would have made that deal.
Right.
I think that in a heartbeat they would have made that deal. Now, I also think that they had a scenario where they picked at 14, and their thought was that they wanted Jair Alexander. That if push came to shove at 14, you know, and they had to pick somebody, you know, if Fitzpatrick was gone and you know, that they would consider doing that. But, you know, I think they definitely would have moved for Ward if they would or were willing to move for Roquan Smith or Terrell Edmonds or any of those other guys. They would have done it. Or Fitzpatrick. I think they would have done it. I think once Ward was off the board, they probably figured they were better off just staying where they were and seeing what kind of maneuvering they could do.
So they move back from 14 to 27 when they trade with the Saints. And that right there made me wonder if, you know, if what Gutekunst and what John Eric Sullivan said was true, and that they targeted Alexander, and that was a guy they had an eye on all along. Does that mean that by going from 14 to 27, they thought that Alexander would still be there at 27? Or were they, do you think, if they were comfortable picking Alexander at 14, but then they moved back to 27, do you think that that was them indicating that they were going to have to go a different direction because they didn't think Alexander would do that? Or was it always going to be trade number one would facilitate trade number two, and they always were going to move back up?
Yes, exactly. I think before, I would be willing to bet, and I'd like to find this out, that they had the move from 27 to 18 already in their pocket when they moved back.
Because of the relationship with Seattle.
Right. I think everybody knew Seattle wanted to move back. They didn't have a second or third round pick. So I think they talked before the draft. I think they probably talked draft day. And they gave them a pretty good deal. And I think it was sitting there the whole time. And so his idea was, okay, get back to 18 and we'll chance it and see if Alexander is there.
So in terms of Alexander, you know, himself, a guy that is obviously tremendous when it comes to speed, you know, runs the 40 and what is it, 4.38, and I think the Packers had him in the 4.3 range when it came to their hand-timed measurement. And so then you look at, you know, the size, and 5'10 and a quarter, 196 pounds, so on the shorter side. The weight is a little bit light, but not too bad. What do you sort of make of this player, and what do you think he can be in a defense that we really don't know a ton about yet?
Well, when I watched a game of his after they drafted him, I was against Kentucky, and I just watched him, and I wanted to see a whole game, not just a highlight reel. And when I looked at him, when I'm watching him on tape, I'm thinking, this guy's really skinny. You know, he's really frail.
Yep.
When I went back and looked and I saw that he was 196 pounds, I was really surprised. Because 196 pounds is decent for a cornerback his size.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think Demarius Randall was much more than 196 pounds.
No, I think you're right.
And so I thought that kind of surprised me. Then looking at him, I saw a guy who, you know, did some press coverage, but they also played some off coverage. He can obviously run. He can really run. But it also looked to me like he was a guy who was probably locked in to be a nickel corner. And that with big receivers in the NFL, I don't know how he's going to compete with those guys. He's not like built like Denzel Ward. I don't think their size is that much different. Denzel Ward's 5'11", I think, right?
Yes.
Maybe 6 foot. And I'm not sure what Ward's weight is, but he's just built more solidly, and he's a press corner. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Denzel Ward is a get-in-your-face, you know, run with you down the field, in your pocket the whole time kind of cornerback. So Alexander will have to see. I don't think he's a sure thing, and I don't think he's a day one starter either. I think they gave that up when they moved from 14. So we'll see. I'm interested to see him. I'm interested to see, you know, their other corner too. So, I have some reservations about Alexander. Once he gets in pads, I think we'll have a better understanding of who he is.
If he does end up winning that starting nickel job, or at least taking it over fairly early in the season, he would be the first rookie corner to play that position a lot since Casey Hayward, correct?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Demarius Randall did as a rookie. He played a little slot, didn't he?
I think, no, because wasn't he playing outside opposite Sam Shields, and then Hayward was still there? It was his final season, so Hayward played in the nickel.
Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Because I seem to remember, I just remember Randall matching up with Amari Cooper and stuff like that late in the season, and Cooper wouldn't have been in the slot. So I don't know. I guess, you know, when you think back to that one season that Casey Hayward had as a rookie, when he had those six interceptions, what did he do well, or what allowed him to be successful as a rookie at that nickel spot?
Well, what allowed him, as I recall, was that, you know, Charles Woodson was still there. And I think Al Harris might have still been there. That can't be right. Anyway, I just remember Casey Hayward being a ball hawk. I mean, he was around the ball all the time, and that was his reputation. But he also wasn't the number one corner. And sometimes it's easier to go in as a nickel back. I mean, that's what Sam Shields did as a rookie. He had, solid corners around him, and then he was the nickel guy. He had Tremont Williams and Charles Woodson, so there wasn't as much pressure on him. And I think that'll probably be the case with Alexander. We'll have to see. But Casey Hayward was sort of in the same boat, and Casey Hayward, he also played outside quite a bit that year, as I recall, because Woodson was playing some slot there. Hayward was just around the ball a lot, and that was his best year, you know. And then
right,
he got hurt.
That was his best year, because then he had all those hamstring problems.
Yeah, and he never was quite the same.
Until he went to San Diego.
Yeah.
So. Must be the sunshine, right?
Yeah, must be.
So then you take a look at their second round pick, and where you look at the frame of Alexander and you say, okay, probably a slot guy. I think you look at the frame of Josh Jackson and you say, this is a guy that can play out on the edge. You know, 6 foot,
yes.
6 foot and 3/8 inch, 196 pounds, 4.56 or 4.54, 40, depending on which measurement you want to use. 18 reps on the bench press. This is a guy that physically, at least, I think is built to be able to play on the edge now. Now, obviously, he can certainly need to adjust to the mental side of things, the speed, all that stuff. But physical traits, I think he's ready to play on the perimeter. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's where his place will be. I do think he can play the slot if you need him to. I think he's pretty versatile. I think he's a good athlete. His ball skills are off the charts. But people kept saying to me, some scouts kept saying, you know, this guy's a zone corner. He's not a press corner. He did play a little bit of press at Iowa, and I asked, you know, people about that, and they didn't seem, you know, Packers people about that, and they didn't seem to have a problem. But that's going to be something to watch, because Pettine loves press corners, and he wants his corners to disrupt routes, you know, right at the line. And both for Alexander and Jackson, that's going to be a real key. And we'll see. I don't know if he'll adapt to it. You know, Kevin King came in. He's a natural press guy with those long arms.
Right.
And even though they played a lot of cover three in Washington, he just had more natural press ability. And Jackson, I guess we'll find out once he gets into Green Bay.
Yeah, the love that Pettine has for press corners was really described pretty well in that book that we've talked about on this podcast, where Nicholas Dowdoff, the author, spent a full year with the Jets, you know, behind the scenes in the scouting department, all that stuff. And he describes a number of scenes from practice or the film room where the coaches are watching, and on one side of the field with their number one corner, you have Darrell Revis, who was so physical with guys in practice that, you know, it was almost over the top. And then on the other side was Antonio Cromartie, a guy that they thought had all the tools to be a really good press corner, but for whatever reason didn't want to do it as much during the games. And there was so much frustration described, you know, from the coaching staff, that they just couldn't understand why this guy wouldn't come up to the line of scrimmage and put his hands on people. And so it really is a core tenet of Pettine's defense. And Jackson has, you know, long enough arms to do it with 31 and an eighth inch arms. But if it's not something that you're experienced with, I can see why that would take a little bit of time, you know, especially to come along the learning curve. And even up until the last season that he was here, I mean, Tom, I'm sure you remember this, you could see, like, when the Packers would do special teams drills, Sam Shields would sort of go off on his own onto the side, and he would use one of the tackling dummies and practice his hand placement just to try and, you know, sharpen up where his hands go for press coverage. And so that definitely is going to be a learning curve for these guys.
Yeah, and I think that's where Devon House and Tremont Williams can have an impact besides on the field. House worked with King quite a bit on press coverage, and Joe Witt loves press coverage, and I think they'll work a lot of it in training camp. And, you know, they just have to figure out exactly how they're going to line up. And I think it'll just be a competition, kind of. Remember the year when it was Rollins and Randall and Shields, and it was like every week there was a different starter.
Yeah.
Shields was having a rough camp, and it was crazy. And I think it could wind up being like that. Whoever's developing the fastest will get the playing time, sort of like the running backs last year too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And they have plenty of bodies too. Not that, you know, the guys like Hawkins and Pipkins and Donatello Brown, not that they'll be pushing for starting reps by any means, but it's going to be one of the deepest position groups in terms of number of bodies on the field, along with the receiver group. So there's going to be plenty of reps that have to be split around to a large number of guys.
Boy, we said that last year too, remember?
And yeah.
It wound up being the most injury-plagued position on the team, so we'll see how deep they are, because I thought that was going to be the case last year.
So we get into the third round, and you mentioned that, you know, moving from 76 back to 88 was, you know, something they had to do. They gave up 76 to the Seahawks and then packaged some other picks and moved up to 88 to select Oren Burks, a linebacker from Vanderbilt. 6'3", 233, ran the 40-yard dash in 4.59 seconds. This pick to me, when I saw it, struck me as an indication that there is a smaller and smaller repertoire of things that they feel comfortable using Jake Ryan for in today's passing game. You know, with Blake Martinez being the number one, the bona fide number one there, you know, I think Ryan still has a place against the run and as a thumper in, you know, goal line and short yardage situations. But the fact that they went out and drafted a linebacker that can run and a guy that can play in coverage indicated to me that there's not going to be many snaps for Jake Ryan this year.
Yeah, and I actually think this could be an attempt to take Blake Martinez off the field on third downs. I think this guy is very much a pet and pick, a specialty guy who can cover up a lot of ground on third downs, can run with tight ends, can cover sideline to sideline with backs. You know how much they got killed by backs.
Oh, yeah.
In screens and everything like that. They need it. They need more athletic ability on the field in third down. And so that's what I think this guy, the aim was for this guy. And if he beats out Ryan, more the better for them. But it definitely is an indication of their desire for more athletic ability on third down.
Do you think that this reinforces or at least lends a little bit of credence to what Mike McCarthy said when at the owners' meetings in Orlando, he indicated that they plan to more or less hem Josh Jones in at the safety spot rather than having him split time between safety and linebacker?
I think so. I mean, I still think, you know, this guy, Oren Burks, is not a guarantee starter.
No.
You know, you could stick him in there and he might not know, you know, left from right. That's a tough position. Blake Martinez went to Stanford and he struggled with the defense his first year. You know, struggled with play action, all kinds of things. So there's no guarantee that he could do this, and we very well could see Josh Jones down there some. But I do think that they want a linebacker, a guy with, you know, some little looser hips than Josh Jones and can really play the run if he has to. I do think McCarthy probably was being honest when he said Josh Jones is going to be a safety.
And at the very least, if it does take a little bit of time for Burks to learn the playbook, he should be an immediate valuable contributor on special teams, I would think, right?
You would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think with that athletic ability. Jair Alexander, too, should be a great special teams player.
Yeah.
With that kind of speed and, you know, halfway decent size, yeah, he should be a gunner.
No question about it. And then from there began the run on wide receivers. So they take one at 133 in, is it Jamon Moore? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So Jamon Moore from Missouri, 6'2 and 5/8, 207 pounds, 4.49. And then as we mentioned in the very beginning, the rest of their receivers are also 6'4, 6'5, 209, and speedsters. So when you look at this group of guys, it seems like they're all built from the same body type. Is that a pretty clear indication that they're not really interested in small receivers anymore?
Yeah, I think it is. I think they definitely went in with targeting big, fast receivers, feeling that's what they're going to have to win, and it's better for Aaron Rodgers to have that kind of guy. You know, it's a bigger target. It's someone they can, you know, it's guys that they can finish in the red zone. They can throw fades. Now they got, you know, how many guys can they throw fades to? They got a 6'7 tight end, a couple of 6'5 wide receivers. You know, they got some height.
And to me, one of the things that needs to be said, and again, you noted it in your column, is that if these guys are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 220 pounds, 210 pounds, and they're all running in the 4.4s or less, there's a reason they fell this far in the draft. Because if you had those physical attributes and you were a complete receiver, you'd go in the top 10. And so, when you look at these guys, I think that some of the areas you mentioned are maybe they're not polished route runners. Maybe there are some questions about their hands. Maybe they, are just not natural when it comes to catching the football and things like that. So there has to be an expected learning curve for all of these guys. And I don't know how early receivers can really contribute because, as
Are
you
you there?
noted, yeah, I'm still here, still here. Cut out for a second, but we're still here. Can you hear me, Tom? Okay,
Yep, we're
so
good.
what is the learning curve like for receivers in Mike McCarthy's offense? Because as you noted, the guys that have contributed early have been second round picks, not fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh.
And they haven't even really contributed that much. Jordy Nelson did not contribute that much as a rookie. Cobb did some. Devontae Adams did round late in the year. And so I think they're part getting back to why they weren't picked high. Someone like Jamon Moore played in a not as sophisticated offense. And I think there's going to be a big learning curve for him in terms of Oh, Valdez Scantling, probably the same thing. I think it'll be an adjustment to understand all the different route concepts and when you run this route at this distance or depth, and all of that kind of stuff. And then around, Iowa attitude was an issue. Blocking, the fact he doesn't block. Not wanting to deal with, his dad or what was the issue because he dropped like a rock.
Yeah, he really did.
And maybe they got a surprise there, maybe they didn't. But his physical skills would definitely warrant a look, and I'm surprised he didn't go higher. So there's something there that people didn't like.
No, I agree
And
with I
we'll find
totally
out.
agree. We're talking about Equanimeous St. Brown if Tom cut out for a second and you couldn't hear him there. But the receiver from Notre Dame, there's a draft guide that Tom and I both looked at, prior to, well, basically all throughout the month of April and everything, and it's from NFL Draft Scout, and they had St. Brown rated potentially as highly as a second round receiver in terms of pure talent. So if there's an ability to maybe mature or just sort of, I guess, be less of a thorn in the side of some of the people in the program, perhaps the way he was at Notre Dame. I think that, it's really big boom or bust potential. But if it does turn into boom, I mean, this is a guy that has every physical gift you would want for that position.
Yeah, and I was surprised. I asked him about his weight at the draft during his conference call, and he said he was up to 218. He had played at 203, and this is a guy whose dad was a Mr. Universe, so he's in the weight room all the time. And if he continues to build himself, he could be a big, powerful receiver. But there's a lot of ifs there, and anytime a guy drops, there's a reason for it. And it could be a coup, but it could be a bust.
I'm interested to see if you agree with me on this, but the fact that they waited until the fourth round to take a receiver, even though they took three guys, to me, that is sort of, I saw it as an indication that Randall Cobb is definitely going to be on this team next year. And I know that there are some people that thought maybe he would get cut in camp or, whatever because of his high cap number, but I just don't see that there's any possible way they could go into the regular season with Devontae Adams as the only established wide receiver, assuming we count Jimmy Graham as a little bit of a separate category. But do you also agree that, because they waited so long to take a receiver, that Randall Cobb is definitely going to be a part of this offense next year?
I've never felt that he wouldn't. I've
Okay.
never felt that there was any chance they would cut him. You just can't with that lack of depth, and they only have to suck it up on this cap number for one more year, and it's not make or break for them, that cap number. I think you absolutely have to have him. He's still got some big playability, and he's a tough guy, and while he may not have produced the way people want it, he's still worthy of being a number three option, which he would be with Adams and Jimmy Graham.
So, yeah.
There's no way that they were going to let him go.
You take a look at the position as a whole now, just in terms of the number of bodies that they have there. And, of course, you know, at the top of the list would be Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. So that gives you two. Then you have Jaron Wilson and Michael Clark makes four. Trevor Davis, five. D'Angelo Yancey, if he continues to develop, would be six. These three rookies make nine. And then there's two other guys, Jake Kummerow and Colby Pearson, who will probably be more training camp bodies than anything else. But, you know, you look at nine guys that, you know, could make a legitimate claim to push for a roster spot. What do they do at that position overall, do you think?
Well, I do think that if they get to camp, and maybe regardless of when they get to camp, that they probably need a veteran. They need to sign a veteran because, I don't know, you know, you can throw Allison in there. He's serviceable. But you have to sort of assume that these rookies are not going to contribute very much.
Exactly.
I just don't think you can think they're going to go out there and catch 60 passes. I just don't. Not the way McCarthy's offense is, not the way that Rodgers hates guys making mistakes. You may have to, you know, find a James Jones at the end of his career type guy. And I know everybody wants him to sign Dez Bryant, but that's not going to happen. I don't think they need that headache. And I think they need someone who's been around a long time and can help these young guys too. So I don't know if they'll do it. Ted Thompson would have never done it. He would have just gone with the rookies and not cared.
True.
We'll find out. You know, whether he feels like he needs safety now.
Well, maybe James Jones wants to come back again, you know? He's only
maybe.
What? You know, he can, well, he's, well, I should say, he would have to give up his reporting career as this scoop
artist.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's too much of a scoop artist to come back and play football.
But no, I agree with you. I think they need somebody. And I would guess that, you know, in terms of the type of person that they would look for, I would have to think that the veteran presence that would benefit the most would be a perimeter player rather than a guy that plays in the slot, because then between Adams and whoever this veteran could be, you'd have two sort of body build role models for these young rookies to come in and sort of mirror a little bit. So we'll have to see who gets released or you know, who gets cut either in the next few weeks here when some of the veterans get cut, or, you know, during training camp. Maybe they pick up somebody that gets released after final cuts. So that's definitely a position to keep an eye on. And then the last player that we haven't discussed yet is James Looney, the defensive end from California, a seventh round pick, 6'2¾", 280, runs very well, 4.89 for a defensive end. And this is a guy that is truly a defensive lineman, not an outside rusher.
Right. So he's a Muhammad Wilkerson type. I'm not saying he's Muhammad Wilkerson talent. He's that type. He's 290, you know, a 290 end, can play 3-4 end, maybe can slide inside for you and play nose. But you can't have too many of those guys. You got to have those guys, those grunt guys up front.
Is 6'2 a little bit small to play 5 technique?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Maybe he's more of a 3 technique in their defense, but there's something they liked about him, and I just think it was building some depth on the defensive line, and also probably they just liked him. He was a guy they saw some potential in. They didn't talk a lot about him, so I'm eager to hear more about him along the way.
He, to me, sort of embodies what the back half of this draft was about. Not that the first half didn't include some of these elements, but if you look at what they did from the fourth round on, it was pretty much pure athleticism. And this is a guy, I think, that fits that mold in terms of, you know, he's probably a better athlete right now than he is a polished football player. But if you can find a way to polish those skills and pair it with the athleticism, just like you mentioned with those receivers or the pass rusher in the seventh round, you know, then maybe you have something. But from what you've noticed from maybe the last 5 years, do you agree that there's a heightened emphasis on just athletes, athletes, athletes?
Yes, speed, length, all of those things. I think that's been going on for a couple of years now with them. I think last year was that case with Josh Jones and King and Montrevious Adams. And I think this year is a continuation. I think they felt like they haven't been as athletic as their opposition. And more games are played inside, and you know, the weather's not as bad as it used to be. So I think they've kind of made a little bit of a shift in philosophy that way.
So we'll finish up here. I solicited some questions from readers, and there's some pretty good ones just about what we thought regarding the draft in general. And the first one is sort of similar to what we just discussed at wide receiver, but at a different position. Andres wants to know, do we think that the Packers would pick up a veteran edge rusher, similar maybe to what they did with Ahmad Brooks, just to try and hold the fort and get something else in case, you know, Fackrell and Beagle don't develop as much? And he says perhaps the same with a blocking tight end. What do you think about those possibilities?
Yeah, I think that's always possible. You're always looking for edge rushers. And, you know, last year was no different. When Brooks came free, they jumped on it. And I don't know what his status will be this year. Maybe I would guess it wouldn't be until training camp that they would make a decision on him. But maybe someone else springs free like that. Usually really good pass rushers never come free. And of course, Brooks had issues. You know, he had the back issues and he's not the player he used to be. So whatever you get, you might be able to get a little bit of something. But they're really counting on Beagle. I think he's someone they really have high hopes for. And Fackrell as well. And then Reggie Gilbert, too, is someone that they have some hope for. So blocking tight end, definitely. I could see them trying to nail someone like that, too, yes.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, I was a little surprised they didn't draft a tight end. I kind of thought that they would later in the middle rounds or toward day three.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what they do there. The next question is from Daniel. I'll take the first shot at this one. Daniel wants to know, is there any chance that we use one of our two first-round picks next year as trade bait to bring in a rusher for this season? I could certainly see why, you know, that would be a theory to consider in terms of, you know, dangling the potential of two first-round picks, just like the way the Saints dangled that potential for Gutekunst. But, you know, if they coveted the pick that much, I find it hard to believe they'd flip it for an edge rusher. And like you said, if they really believe strongly in Beagle, and if they do think that Fackrell is not a bust, or if they do think that Gilbert can give them something more with additional playing time, I just don't think they'd part with an asset like that, do you?
No, and you'd have to consider that if someone were going to offer an edge rusher, it would be someone who is either, you know, really highly paid and is set to become a free agent, you know, in the next year. You know, it would be someone like a JPP last year. You know, New York knowing they were going to lose him in free agency and trying to get something for him desperately before he leaves. That's the kind of guy who would be available. And I think Gutekunst, 9 times out of 10, would rather have a young guy with 4 years guaranteed that he would be on the roster than take a chance with a veteran like that.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. That's a really good point. I didn't think of it that way in terms of the type of guy that would be available or the type of guy that teams would be willing to part with, you know, for a first round pick. One of the next questions comes in says, the question asks, was drafting three wide receivers a message to the current group of receivers on the roster? Like we sort of talked about earlier, I think Adams and Cobb are sort of immune from any sort of message sending that would have come through. But when you look at Trevor Davis, when you look at D'Angelo Yancey, when you look at even Michael Clark, I think those are guys that if they don't make strides or go out and win roster spots, that they could certainly be guys that wouldn't, that I don't think Gutekunst would lose sleep over if he had to cut one of those guys. What do you think?
Yeah, Geronimo Allison too. He's no lock to make the roster. I think this was an attempt to make use of a deep class, not a great class, but deep class, and sort of like the running backs last year, and also knowing that they have to remake the receiver position. It's just they need to do it. The guys that they've drafted have not come through, and they need to continue to take shots at receivers.
We'll take one more. This one comes from David, and David wants to know, do you think that Gutekunst's choices with a long snapper and a punter were an indictment of what Thompson did as general manager, perhaps neglecting those two positions? And so, you know, using draft picks on those was sort of a means of course correction that in theory would have a higher chance of success, you know, than, you know, free agent guys that weren't drafted at all. And I kind of agree with this one. The long snapper is one I don't understand. I wouldn't have drafted one personally. I think you can find one, you know, off the street, a guy that isn't drafted. The punter, like you said, Tom, if they really think this guy is transformational, then I can see why it's valuable. But man, the fifth, I know they've taken punters higher over the years, and you mentioned two of them, but the fifth to me just seemed a little bit high. And so that, I do think, is sort of an indication that they're not happy with what Ted Thompson left them in the cupboard.
Yeah. The long snapper, you know, they've been trying to get that right the last 3 years. They've been trying to get younger and more athletic there, and they've just not done a good job of scouting and finding that guy. And I don't, yeah, I'm not a big fan of taking a guy in the draft. Plus, that guy has to, Hunter Bradley is going to have to really get in the weight room. I mean, he is not a big guy, and he's going to have to be able to block. And I think that'll be a little bit of an issue. Also, with the punter, I don't think Ted Thompson left them bare with Justin Vogel.
Okay.
I think that was you know, I mean, Justin Vogel might end up punting in the NFL for 10 years.
Yeah,
he
that's
might
true.
Not be great, but again, I just think this is one of those cases where they couldn't believe that this guy was sitting there, and they looked at it as if he's what he was in college, and there's so many positives on that side, except if, of course, that tendonitis he had in his knees that he claims is gone.
Right.
That's a red flag. I just think that, you know, they felt like they need to take that chance with a fifth round pick that they had left over. So I don't, in my mind, it's not a bad pick. The long snapper is, and I don't think it has anything to do with what Ted left them. I think, you know, he tried to get punters, and Vogel was the best one he had gotten to date.
So there you have it, an hour breaking down the draft. Is there anything we missed, Tom?
We didn't talk about Cole Madison very much.
Oh, that's right.
But,
that's right.
You know, he's another, I think this guy is just another in a line of those offensive linemen, you know, that they take late in the draft. Big old tackle guard who will play guard. Physical, and they'll see whether they can turn him into a starter right away, because I think he's got a shot to jump right in there and be the right guard starter.
Yeah, definitely. I was talking to one of my friends from home about this. He was just asking me, what interior linemen I thought were good for the top of the draft because he's a Vikings fan and they need help on the line. And I said, well, it's kind of interesting because when the Packers build their offensive line, if you go back just even a couple of years ago, they were starting four left tackles plus Corey Linsley, because Bakhtiari was obviously a left tackle, and Lane Taylor played left tackle, and TJ Lang played left tackle, and Brian Bulaga played left tackle, all
And
in
don't forget,
college.
JC Treader played left tackle
Right.
too. So
And
when he was in there,
Sitton as well, correct?
Sitton as well. Well, Sitton was, he might have played some left, but he was a tackle.
Okay, so essentially what you're seeing here is rather than the Packers choosing college guards to play guard in the NFL, they're taking these tackles that have the athleticism and the feet and the mobility and then turning them into guards. And that, I think, is it's certainly not unique to the Packers. I'm sure there's other teams that do it too, but it's certainly a philosophical thing that the Packers are sticking with. And this could be the next example because Madison was a tackle at Washington State.
Definitely. He might be a guy that can slide in there. Justin McCray's still a possibility. Kyle Murphy's still a possibility. I do think the fact they didn't take a tackle fairly high means that they're gonna stick with Brian Bulaga and hope that they can get something out of him this year.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Were you surprised they didn't take a tackle?
I was a little bit surprised. They had some options to do that. And I think they're going to roll with Bulaga. And if he's not ready, Kyle Murphy or Spriggs, I don't know how they feel about Spriggs, but I think they haven't given up on Bulaga, even though it's possible he won't be ready for the start of the season. We'll have to see. And who knows how long he lasts? That's the big question, is
Right.
how long can he go without getting injured again?
And this is the final year of his deal, or he's got one more after this, I think.
One more after this.
Yeah. So
After this.
that is
So,
a long-term extension that did not play out favorably for the organization, I don't
No,
think.
they got, you have to pay for your tackles.
Right.
And when he was in there, he was a darn good tackle. Really
Completely
good.
agree. Yep.
They got, a really good year out of him in 16. They got half a year out of him in 17. If he can go 2 more years, then it'll be worth it. If he can't, then, that was the gamble you have to pay when you got
Right.
a tackle. Sometimes it just works out like that.
No, I totally agree. You got to pay for it. And if he bounces back from this ACL and does play, more games in 18 and 19, then it will be worth it overall. But I would say that the likelihood of that, based on his injury history, is probably not very high. So we'll have to see how that plays out on the right side of the line. But I think that covers everybody now. Did we miss anything?
I think we got everybody.
All right, so we will probably do another one of these shortly now that the Packers are moving into their rookie mini camp and OTAs and all that fun stuff. But be sure to check out PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com for all kinds of leftover coverage from the weekend of the draft and some subsequent coverage as well, leading up to the rookie mini camp this weekend. So thank you guys very much for listening. We appreciate all the support and all the feedback. It was really great on the pre-draft episode. We thank you guys for all the nice words, and we will talk to you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.